Maybe we'll do these questions and then do a few questions. Is that good? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Now that it's about 9 o'clock, but we don't mind. What is the difference between taking sannyasa or not in terms of commitment and dharma? That's a good question. You see, taking sannyasa is a lifestyle. It means that you're committing to a lifestyle. And then if you make a commitment like that, you should feel that that's the appropriate lifestyle for you, because Krishna in the whole Bhagavad Gita says, you do karma yoga, stay in your life. Stay in your life with your work, with all of your relationships, so that those raga dveshas can be neutralized. And Arjuna had this feeling that I want to just take sannyasa now, leave this war and everything, and just go up into the mountains and so on, that I can really just concentrate and get this knowledge and, you know, not do anything else. But Krishna, over and over throughout the Gita, because Arjuna kept bringing this up again and again, mm-hmm. said, no, you stay here and you get this knowledge here so that you can work through these raga dvesha. Swamiji himself has said, go to the 3-year course and then you go home. You know, go back into your situation, whatever that may be. And when you feel like a sannyasi in your life with all of the people, with all of the different situations, then you can take sannyasa and go. Because otherwise what happens is you take sannyasa, you go, and then all of the issues and everything just reestablish themselves there, and you don't have the freedom to really live your life. It's very, sannyasa gives you, in India, gives you quite a restricted life. It can be absolutely fine for you. You might not feel that restriction at all, because all you really want to do is contemplate and study and teach, and that's it. You know, if you're a sannyasi, that should be what you do. And there's not all of these other things going on, you know. So you can be completely, your commitment to dharma, commitment to this knowledge can be 100% complete. You don't have to be a sannyasi for that. But the karma yoga lifestyle might be more conducive to neutralizing your likes and dislikes and feeling that inner freedom no matter what the situation. So there's a lot to be said for staying in your life. But if you get an opportunity to go take a course for a month or for 3 months or even 3 years so that you can really have a chance to get that knowledge, that's just a boon. But then to go on hanging on there, Swamiji would never allow it because he felt it was not good for you, not good for us. You know? For me, even after the 3 years I wanted to go, I never thought that I would ever leave, that I could ever leave. It was not possible when I went to the first course in 72, the 3 year. But by the time that 3 years was over, I was ready to go and be in the world and be more on my own. And I came back for the last section of the second course, and then I ran courses and all that. But I still, it's nice to also have your own space and your own life, and where the life centers around you, not always around the guru. Because in a way you're totally marginalized, because everybody else is just there to be with your teacher, as are you. But nobody's there to be with you. And you're just not the center of your world. And so if you stay too long in that situation, it can be not a healthy thing. And you'll know when it's, if it gets into that type of situation, that you don't feel like you're growing anymore, because you're not the center of your world. Usually, you know, in your home, you're the center of your world, and your friends come to you, and this is where you relax, and you come home here from work, and you have your pets, and you have your parents, and all of these. But it's all you have your own center, mm-hmm. your own space. So it's not about. Taking sannyasa doesn't increase your commitment. You can be totally committed, but sannyasa, your teacher may not feel that's the best move at that particular time doesn't mean you're not committed, or that you have any less commitment to Dharma, you know. Not taking sannyasa, you have a lot more freedom to work out your desires, your raga dveshas, and not feel constricted. If you take sannyasa, you shouldn't. It shouldn't be something that makes you feel constricted. It should be that's you could live this life and other lives and forever, okay. Just you know, being with the shastra and the teaching, and the other things have all totally fallen off. Then it's a nice lifestyle. And as a Westerner, also taking sannyasa is not easy. There's not very many people who have done that successfully because it's not our culture. You know, and so then you have to try to live as a sannyasi in the United States is not easy because we're not set up for that. You know, Swamiji is able to do it. Because he's Swamiji and he can do it. Mm-hmm. He did it. Everybody has to go along with it. That's it. Mm-hmm. And he did it very beautifully. He's also in Bali. He has his own ashram, own rules. He doesn't have to go, he doesn't have to work to make a living and all of that, you know. What happens with a lot of people in other organizations in the West that take sannyasa, then they have to live like a priest in a some sort of a monastic life with priests where they're supported by the institution. That is not sannyasa. That's how priests live. You know, Catholic priests, or nuns, they're supported by the institution and they live in a monastic life and they do seva and all of that, but they're taken care of. Sannyasi is not taken care of. You know, the sannyasi, Bhagavan's taking care of you. So, you take what comes like that. It's not living in a and being supported by an institution. So that's a big difference. So. India's set up for that. The people know they're supposed to give to the sadhus and take care of them, you know. And they have a value for them. What is a constructive and healthy way to process and overcome a loss and mourning? You know, this is a little envelope. You like that? I think is to not try to push it away and to actually mourn it. And, you know, feel the freedom to, say if it's a loss of a person, feel the freedom to have that grief and to cry over it and all of the mourning and grief that comes, to allow that to be kind of a natural expression. Grief is that those tears and mourning and all of those things are a natural expression. It has its own beauty. And so I certainly wouldn't try to bottle that up or feel like you shouldn't have that. You know, I would allow yourself to have it. In India, they really honor it. Like, say, for instance, somebody dies, or one parent dies, as your parents always die. It's just understood that you lock yourself in, you stay at home for at least 10 days without even coming out, or 2 weeks, I think it is. And people bring food and visit you, and you're in mourning, and you shouldn't have to go out into the world and do anything. You should just be able to be with that loss and that suffering and sorrow that you feel, and have others come into the home and join you in that. And so they really respect that. And they would be in India, if you were to go out and running around, they wouldn't understand that. They think you're supposed to be in there for it. At home for several days, and the whole the family and relatives and friends all come and bring food and sit with you and remember, you know. So I think grief is something to be honored. And another thing, I had this experience and I lost my brother about 20 years ago. That's a long time ago, actually. But I was so close to him, and I really, and I had knowledge at the time, but I really grieved and missed him, and I would just start crying. And it felt really good. Like he deserved that grief. He was such a beautiful person, you know. And I felt that too when I was missing him and grieving for him. I was glad that I was, because he should be grieved for. And I remember when we had the funeral for him, and a lot of people came, a lot of his friends came from everywhere, and his teachers. He wasn't that old, even in his early 30s, I think. But people, all of his old friends, all his old high school friends and college friends and his community there all came. And I was so grateful to have all of those people there appreciating him, you know, and honoring him by coming to the funeral. I remember thinking, I will always go to a funeral if it's somebody that I care about or somebody that means something to me, that I will always go to that funeral, because I realized how much it meant to me that these people came and were, you know, sharing that, honoring him in that way. It meant so much. And I just realized what kind of an archetypal, very pattern that goes through all humanity, all the cultures, when somebody dies or there's some sort of a loss, you know. So that's about grieving about death. But then we have our own personal losses. You know, you break up, or you get divorced, or whatever, all these type of things that we have to go through in this era. And a lot of suffering, a lot of grief for that too. And then I would not ever push it away. I think it's also very cleansing of a lot of toxins in the body, with all the pressure and hurt and everything that you feel. You know, the sadness of having been so close and breaking up, all of that. There's just so much that takes place when a relationship ends or there's a parting. And so I would not ever push away that grief. I would just embrace it and let it wash through your body, and let it wash through with all of the tears and everything. It's cleansing, you know, not to deny it. I think it's very unhealthy to deny it and to not let yourself have a very organic process around it, you know. I think it'll come back and bite you later if you do that.